Dave Friend, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Well, I'm super fantastic also. It is Friday, so how can I be anything else, right? I
mean, we have made it through the week, and I'll tell you, I've got an idea for kind of a new thing on the show. I just want to just trot this past you. Maybe it's a good idea, maybe not. So you let me know, okay? I feel okay. Like what better time for us to have these kind of, you know, future of the show discussions than live here on the air when it's whatever you're saying, right?
For all the world to hear and comment on, right? So,
okay. Folks, it's called transparency, okay? That's what it's called. It's called transparency. But anyway, I think once in a while we just do an Elon Musk Friday, you know? Wednesdays are amazing. Once in a while we do an Elon Musk Friday, because we've already sort of done that a couple times anyway, right? So he just generates enough content that he gets his own shows, you know. So I think we just own that once in a while it's an Elon Musk show.
I think so, definitely. So we, you know, it's something I talk about with my kids a lot. You know, they bring up Elon Musk because of this project or that project he's working on. And they said, well, you know, what we need to do is just every now and then just pray that Elon Musk stays sane and not, you know, doesn't go evil or something, because, you know, he has all the makings of a supervillain.
He's a Bond villain at least in the making, if not.
That's right, and we just, you know, as long as he stays a good guy, you know, I think the world will be a better place for him being in it. But, you know, just. You know, he's one lab accident away from being a supervillain, so we need to be careful.
I believe that line is from Big Bang Theory, right?
It is. That's right.
Howard said that. Yeah, he's one lab accident away from being a supervillain. And, of course, Elon Musk, he's around a lot of labs, so everybody please be careful around Mr. Musk. We need him to stay on the good side. So, yeah, tonight's show is Global Fixes the Elon Musk Way, and we're just going to talk about some, you know, big problems of the world that Mr. Musk has been kind enough to show us the solution to, potentially. Right. And we start with one of our favorite topics anyhow. Elon says, we can power America by covering a small corner of Utah with solar. Actually, that's the headline of the story. He says, or Nevada, which I thought was nice of him to, you know, give us our choices states there.
Well, you know, Nevada is historically the place that we do everything that we want to do, but don't need to do in polite society, right? I mean, that's
that's Nevada, exactly. Yes.
And so, in a nutshell, that's what Nevada's all about anyway. So why not Nevada? I mean, that's you know, we need electricity, but we don't necessarily want ugly solar panels, you know, everywhere. So we put them all in one place and power the entire country. So how much of Nevada would we have to cover to power the nation?
I don't know that he gives a, you know? Does he give a number? It's a small amount, though. It's a small amount of space, that's for sure.
Yeah, apparently he said it amounts to one corner of Utah.
Yeah.
Would be sufficient. It's not that much. And and think of, you know, if we made it, you know, like a project on the order of you know, the Hoover Dam or the moonshot or something like that, and made it happen. You know, we could become, you know, or get pretty close to being a zero emissions nation, right? I mean, we could even, you know, not just power our homes and things, but you know, start, you know, let Elon Musk you know, put out those solar panels and then sell us a bunch of Tesla automobiles to drive around. So, I mean, our transportation fuel would be from this electric as well. Any downsides to this, Phil? You know, obviously there'd be an environmental impact where in that part of the world that you covered with solar panels. But
Both of those states, whether you look at Nevada or Utah, they're both actually most of the territory in both of them, particularly Nevada, is owned by the federal government.
Right.
A lot of national parks, national monuments, just designated federal space. Utah, definitely, most
of the West. I mean, 90% of the West is owned by the federal government. It's a big chunk
of the West is. It's true. You know, the mountains and the deserts. But that shouldn't preclude doing something like this. I think what you want to do is you want to find the most boring parts.
Wherever, a place that nobody wants to go. I mean, maybe the center of Death Valley or something like that. I mean,
Exactly. You know, when you go to the desert Nevada or Utah, I mean, there are spectacular places. There are places that everybody wants to go see, and then there's a lot of just that flat land there. That's what you want to find. You want to take a big chunk of that and start mapping out your strategy for the energy. He also suggested you take a small section of Spain and you power all of Europe. Same basic idea. And the article helpfully points out that that more power from the sun hits the Earth in a single hour than humanity uses in an entire year. Yet solar only provides 0.39% of the energy used in the U.S. last year. So there's plenty of room between where we are and where Musk is saying we could get to. But I like the idea. I think the only thing that will probably stop us from doing something like that is it'll just be his solar roofing panels, right? People will start collecting the energy all over the country anyway, and we won't need a big dedicated space for it.
And that's another thing that Musk has done. He's providing like this transparent thing that you can put on top of your roof. And, I mean, your roof will still have normal shingles. But it'd be entirely solar panel, you know, at the same time. And so, you know, if he's not putting solar panels out in some desolate corner of the United States to power the whole country, he could be doing it just on top of your roof too. So, it seems to me that, solar is a growth industry in a way that say wind power will never be. There's just so much room, as you said, for improvement.
The thing is, we can get a lot better at collecting wind energy, but we're not going to see the kinds of improvements that we're going to see in solar in terms of capturing that energy. And you don't have that, an hour's worth of wind on Earth would power the whole Earth for a year, right? I don't think that's true. You know, with the sun, it is true. I mean, there's a big difference between wind, which is an impressive force to us mere mortals, and sun, which is an impressive force to anybody. Right? I mean, look at it.
Well, think about it this way. I mean, the reason we have wind is the solar power, right?
Exactly.
And wind is secondary to the solar that's hitting us, and it is powered by it. And so, why worry with this secondary effect of solar when you can just get the solar? So, go ahead, Phil. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say. So that's a good start. Okay, this is a good start for Elon Musk saves the world kind of episode of the show. But let's move on to some other problems that he's working on solving, because this one kind of struck me a little bit by surprise. SpaceX has just asked permission to launch 4,425 satellites more than orbit Earth today. And we're going to come back to that in just a minute, because I want to lead into that with this other story. The race to wrap the Earth in internet is heating up. And I hadn't heard of all these projects. This was mostly new to me as I'm reading this. Google has a project called Project Loon, where they're launching balloons, 15-meter-wide balloons, into the stratosphere, about 20 clicks above the Earth. And, you know, I mean, I've heard of that idea, but I didn't realize that Google was actually doing it. These developments kind of sneak up on you. So that's like this, you know, surround the world in internet solution, right? This is how you do it. You use these balloons to provide internet to basically the whole world. Now, Facebook has a project called Akia, and they're going to use solar-powered drones. Okay, so you got balloons, You got airplanes, right? You got airplanes flying around.
And these solar powered drones are huge, Phil. Have you seen the YouTube videos on these things?
I have not. I read in the article that they have a wingspan bigger than a 737, so that is a big drone.
They're amazing, and they're so light that this airplane that has a wingspan that like that of a 737 or something bigger, is very, very light, and the reason is it's solar powered, and so you get this thing into the air. It showed it being dragged down the runway by a pickup truck. And its propellers were turning again from solar, and then it slowly lifts off, and then would get up to altitude and can stay at altitude. It just puts itself in a holding pattern at a high altitude above weather, basically
60,000 to 90,000 feet. So the clouds aren't going to block the sun from the.
That's right, And it's up there collecting solar during the day, and at night it depletes its battery overnight, but not so much that it's coming down. And so it can stay up indefinitely and serve as an antenna. I think it's a fascinating project. I think it's awesome. And so that's what Facebook is doing. And so Google's using these high-altitude balloons. Facebook's
right.
using these airplanes. And what Elon Musk is doing – is even higher still, right? So
that's right. He's gonna. Yeah. So we got to. We were at 20 kilometers up. Then we were at 60,000 to 90,000 feet, which, doing my quick rough math, is more than 20 kilometers up, right? And now the SpaceX satellites, they're going to be in orbit 715 to 790 miles above the surface of the Earth. And this is kind of the old-fashioned way, in some ways, I guess, of giving internet to the whole world. Because basically, these are telecom satellites. I mean, it's a new generation of them. It's a new breed of them. But it's, if you're familiar with the idea of the communication satellite, that's what these are. And you just build a network of them around the entire world. Each one covers an arc of the planet. What is it? I've got it here someplace. Diameter 1,300 miles on the ground. Okay, so you need them. That's why you need thousands of them, right? Because there's a lot of
geosynchronous orbit. Each little satellite would be over a particular point on the planet, right? So they got to be in pretty high orbit, although not as high of an orbit as larger geosynchronous satellites. The smaller it is, the lower the geosynchronous orbit can be, right? So
that's right. And we're talking about each of these is about the size of a Mini Cooper, it says. So, a nice compact communication satellite, and we're talking about several thousand of them. Here's my reaction. I love all these ideas, by the way. And it's fine with me if everybody tries to implement and there's competing methods for. How you get your internet? Oh, are you on the balloon? No, I use the satellite, right? Oh no, you use the drones. Cool, that's fine. To me, if they all get implemented, that's fine because then there's going to be resiliency in how we're getting our internet. But will these companies then become internet service providers? They're going to become ISPs basically at that point. I mean, Google is So we'll have to pay a bill to Google for internet access. Is that?
Yeah, I would guess so. Now. I would think that there'd be a latency problem with the satellite service. I would guess that I'd click on a website and have to wait a couple of seconds for it to be routed all the way into space and back, and there would something that's a little closer to me, like the drone or the balloon, might have a less of a latency issue. But it might be so fast that it wouldn't really matter. And there's something to be said for
750 miles at light speed is not going to be a big issue. I don't think.
Maybe not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not.
I think, a perceptive guy like you might pick up on it, but I think most people will be okay.
it's the princess and the pea deal.
That's right. I mean, if they were on the moon, that would be an issue. But that's right, Stephen. You are sensitive to lag times, I understand. be an issue.
I'm a spoiled guy when it comes to the internet.
And yeah, it would be an issue. I don't think it's gonna be a big problem.
Click. It hasn't loaded. This is BS.
Yeah. It's like 11 milliseconds. What am I supposed to? But I think they're all wonderful visions. The big problem with Musk's is that is a big plan. Okay, it's like his Mars plan. Right. I mean, the man thinks big. You talk about launching 40-some-hundred satellites, you know, when most countries have only ever done one or two. Right?
Well, my issue is we've already got a pretty big space junk problem. You know, what he's talking about launching into space is more satellites than is already up there, right? I mean, and that's my gosh, you know, what happens when these things cease to operate? Before I would green light a project like this, I'd want to see redundant capabilities of these satellites to bring themselves down when at the end of their useful life. You know?
Right. Yeah. Eventually we'll need that, right? We'll need the Shepherd up there. You know, collecting them. We'll have to recycle them. We'll have to, yeah. This would be a good project to adopt just because it will really drive home the need, right? to kind of manage our orbital space more than in a more thorough and responsible way than we've done it up to now.
Right.
So, what's the time frame on this? Does it say? You know, when is he going to have the world completely surrounded in internet anyway?
I think it's probably more of a matter of getting the funding, I think, than anything else. I mean, the technology's already there. You know, I mean, there's nothing.
Still,
It would take a while to launch
that many satellites, right? I mean,
yeah,
you have to build the robot.
Each of them is pretty major. If we're talking about a Mini Cooper, 4,425 Mini Coopers, that's all fairly sizable launches. You'd need 4,425 launches. You know, if you're doing it with something smaller, what if he could get it down to where what he was putting up there, each of these 4,000 plus satellites, was the size of a basketball? You know, I mean, you know, you could do one launch and put up, you know, 100 of them.
Right. Right.
With a single launch, you know, seems to me that this project could be developed in that way. We continue to work on it until you can get the satellites down to that size.
I'm sure somewhere on a drawing board he has that version of it, but that's a few generations in. I mean, because you quickly, you know, for some reason your suggestion, well, instead of making it the size of a Mini Cooper, just make it the size of a volleyball. It reminds me of the old dogs that poop money, right? It's just kind of a, where, instead of, right?
Yeah, just get you a dog.
I know you figured this whole thing out, but check it out. Same thing, only make them a tenth the size, okay? Go. Do it, but
go.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a big, chasm to cross there. But I think you're right. Ultimately,
how do you make $10 million? First, start with $1 million.
Well, that's right. That's $1 million and don't pay income tax, right? First, get $1 million. same basic idea.
Right.
But I think you're right. Ultimately, this will have to be miniaturized, and we or our descendants will look back on these kinds of discussions. They'll all seem incredibly quaint. All three of these ideas are going to sound very steampunk in a few years, right? In a few decades, I should say, when whatever's finally implemented is implemented. But I don't know. These are all great ideas, and I hope one or more of them actually does get implemented. Because I love the idea of the world being wrapped in internet and having it be, you know, redundant and resilient and ready to go. Plus, we're going to need it. We're going to need that internet connection if we're ever going to go to Mars. Okay, I can't make a case for that, but I was just trying to segue to the next topic. But here we go. How feasible are
you? Well, here's the segue.
Go do it.
Musk is also talking about doing the same thing at Mars. He wants satellites around Mars to establish a Mars internet for purposes of, you know, controlling robots on the surface, communicating communications and everything else. He wants to set up a Mars net. That's one of the steps in his Mars project. So there's your segue.
So there it is. Okay. So now we've got this story, which is basically how feasible are Elon Musk's plans to settle on Mars? A planetary scientist explains. I read it. Let's cut to the chase. Basically, he says it's possible. It passes the sniff test of technical feasibility, right? Where it hangs up is in the way I read the story is it just in the everything's got to fall into place in a very particular way to meet anything like Elon Musk's timeline for doing this. And they even quote him as saying timelines aren't really his thing, and he's not really great with those. So that might be an issue. And also, interesting point that's made, which is that when you start launching these rockets that hold 100 people, you got to fill every seat, and they've all got to pay their $200,000. You know, for even assuming that big economies of scale thing has been pulled off, which is a trick. Not unlike the one, Stephen, you were just asking for around the, we'll just make the satellites, you know, a lot smaller and everything will be fine, right? I mean, that's kind of what he did, right? He said, well, it costs $1 billion to send somebody to Mars, so I'll do it for $200,000, right? I mean, it's the same kind of leap. And maybe it will work, but it's all got to fall into place, right? Well, I don't know. What was your takeaway from that?
Well, I believe that, so much has to go right that it may be, you know, quite some time before we see, you know, people go in significant numbers to Mars. But here's the thing, though, that I do believe that Musk will be able to pull off. He says that there will not be another Mars launch window pass, that SpaceX is not putting something on Mars.
Right. You've mentioned this before. Yes.
Yeah, I believe that he's going to pull that off. SpaceX has become the first private company to manage orbital flight.
Right.
And I know it's a long way from orbital flight to putting a probe on Mars, but I think he can accomplish that. I think that that's a
possibility. But it's also a long way from putting a probe on Mars to sending 100 people to Mars, right? I mean,
that's right. And I guess that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that I believe that he can accomplish the probe on Mars, but it's a huge step after that to putting boots on the ground. And unless we have life extension, it might be the sort of thing that we don't live to see. And that would be a shame. I want to see people make it to Mars. And but it's just such a huge undertaking. Who knows if that's in the near future or not.
Well, I'll say this. If anybody can make everything fall into place, he's our best bet, right? I mean, he's the guy who can possibly do it. So I will give an awful lot of benefit of the doubt to Elon Musk. I will give him more than just about anybody I can think of. So I hope it works. And the fact that it is technologically feasible, that the technology can exist, you know, to me that says, well, shifting those odds in favor of it happening at all, and then shifting those odds in favor of it happening sooner rather than later, it all kind of becomes our responsibility, right? It's like, how many of us around the world and decide, yeah, this is a good idea, this is something that that can really happen? How many people become as convinced as Elon Musk is, right, that it can happen, and take that step, right, make that leap themselves? You know, I'm not going to predict that it definitely will happen in 5 years, but I'm thinking if we end up on Mars in the foreseeable future with people there, there's a really good chance that Elon Musk had something to do with it, put it that way.
Yeah, I agree.
And with that, let's talk about, hey, once we get to Mars, we got some terraforming to do. It's other geek time, Stephen.
Here's
how we prepare for going to Mars, right? We got to play this game.
That's right. Well, the on Board Game Geek it's the website. If you're interested at all in modern board gaming, Phil, I recommend checking out Board Game Geek. It is
also a great place to meet women. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, all right.
I'm sure it is. No, I'm just kidding. That was a terrible thing to say.
Anyway, it is the fifth. This game called Terraforming Mars is the fifth most popular new game of 2016. Okay, it's got the buzz. It's the one that you know. It's of all the games. And we're talking. There's probably 1,000 new games came out in 2016. It's number five. Okay, and at one point in the year, it was number one. So anyway, it's a huge hot game, and so what is it about? So it's the year 2400, or it's the 2400s, and there people are on Mars, and the project is taken up to turn Mars into something that can support life. And
okay.
So you got so you're each playing as you're in this game a corporation that is sponsored by the government back on Earth to initiate these projects to raise the temperature, the oxygen level, ocean coverage on Mars to make it habitable. And so that's what you're doing. You're playing as one of these corporations, and each round of the game is called a generation, and that's the reason is that's how long it would take, okay? So there's multiple generations in this game that pass for Mars to become terraformed. And so that by the end of the game, if you contributed most to terraforming Mars or other projects like launching people into deeper parts of the solar system and mining a moon on moons of Jupiter or something like that, if you have contributed most in this game to these things as a corporation, you win the game. What you're trying to do throughout the game is build up your production, and your production allows you to buy capabilities to contribute in different ways to this project. And, it's said to be, I have not yet played it, Phil, very much looking forward to playing it in the next month or so. And I'll give you a review after I've had a chance to actually play it. But it is said to be a huge amount of fun and different every time you play it, because it can go down so differently each time you play it. So
as you describe it, I'm sure it's a million miles away from this in almost every sense, but somehow what you just said kind of reminds me of Monopoly, right? So people who haven't played games like this, right, trying to get their head around how something like this would work, there's at least some parallel there, right? A game where you're working your way towards, in Monopoly, you're trying to buy up, as much real estate as you can.
It's said to be like an engine building game. What you're doing is you're contributing as you have the tension in the game is between doing stuff to terraform Mars on your turn, mm-hmm. or developing the capability to do something to terraform Mars. You can't really do both, but the whole point of the game, what earns you, your victory, is to contribute to the terraforming of Mars, but you can't do it if you don't have the capability. So I'm going to continue to build the capability, and now I'm going to switch over and start really pushing the issue of terraforming. It's finding the right balance of building the engine to do it with, versus actually doing it, is and doing it better than everybody else at the table is where the tension lies in this. So, I've seen enough of it to know that I could recommend it as something that you'd want to go look at. But I will give my review in a month or so of this.
All right. Well, you check it out. You let us know. Come back to us and let us know how Terraforming Mars went. Basically,
yeah,
it's a great way to get ourselves ready for, it's basically Elon Musk's future. We're all just going to be living in it. And that is a wrap both for this show and for this week on The World Transformed. We are going to be back next week with three brand new shows. Looking forward to that. Steven, it's been great talking with you. It's been great having you all with us. And until next time, live to see it.